This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours, it will be ours. Oh, one day, when the war is won, we will be sure, we will be sure.
Hands to the heavens, no man, no weapon formed against, yes, glory is destined. Everyday women and men become legends. Sins that go against our skin become blessings. The movement is a rhythm to us. Freedom is like religion to us. Justice is juxtaposition in us. Justice for all just ain't specific enough. One son died, his spirit is revisiting us. True and living, living in us. Resistance is us. That's why Rosa sat on the bus. That's why we walked through Ferguson with our hands up. When it go down, we woman and man up. They say stay down, and we stand up. Shots, we on the ground. The camera panned up. King pointed to the mountaintop, and we ran up.
One day.
Good morning. What's happening? Welcome to Guardian Radio. I'm Levin Miller. Give me one second. Thank you so much for joining me. You know, this is what happens when you try to have technology. It kind of gets all in the way sometimes. Thank you so much for being with me. Thank you so much for having me with you. I don't know what you do at 11 o'clock in the morning, but whatever you do, and I'm happy that you're here, as I'm unleashed on your radio, right here on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Can you believe it? Hubert Alexander Ingram has COVID. My goodness. I don't know how I want to feel about this. Now I know it's real. Like, I didn't think it was really a real thing before. And I know Justin Trudeau's wife had it. And, you know, I kind of, don't judge me, but I kind of thought about it the way I think about HIV. Like, they just need big time people to sell it. So they let Magic Johnson sell it because he's very popular and everyone in the world knows who Magic Johnson is. So let's just say that he has it so that the two people on the entire face of the planet that does have it could kind of know that it's a real thing, because if Magic could have it, then anyone could have it. And I don't think he really has it at all. And if he does have it, I want to say that his looks a lot different from all of the other suspected people that had it. I don't mind having that strain of it. That would make me a multi-oogle-boogle rich billionaire with shares in several companies in the NBA and, you know, other stuff like that. So if I could have that strain right there, maybe, just maybe. But Lord Jesus, Hubert Ingram got COVID. But I mean, where did Papa go to get COVID? Where? I'm trying to think. I don't see Hubert Ingram anywhere. I don't run into him in the food store. I don't see him at Arawaki. You know, quite honestly, I would imagine that if any one of the former prime ministers would get COVID, it would be Perry Christie. Like, if you know Mr. Christie, you must know that COVID-19 has to be looking for him, because Perry Christie is the most hugginest, kissinest man I've ever met in my entire life. Like, if Mr. Christie were to walk into a room of 85 people, 82 and a half of them would have been hugged and kissed by Perry Christie by the time as he got to the back of the room. And how is Christie avoiding COVID? I don't know. I mean, if you ever do run into Mr. Ingram, on the very, very, very small chance that you will run into Hubert Ingram, the guy is literally walking at 30 miles an hour and awkwardly throwing his hands in the air at anyone that makes eye contact with him in a way that kind of suggests, I saw you, you saw me, just let me keep walking by. And he kind of never stops. All he ever says is, thank you very much, thank you very much, thank you very much. And he keeps walking. Not Perry Gladstone Christie. Oh, no. Perry Gladstone Christie's going to walk into the door. He's going to look left and right, grab the cufflinks, stare around the room in a lazy gaze to see who all has identified that Perry Gladstone Christie is in the building. Then he's going to have to stand up and do the look up into a blind spot in the room that only he can see, as he then saunters his way to the middle of the room, at which time he's going to grab the first young lady and says, "Don't I know you from somewhere?" And she's going to say something like, "Yes, I's Miss Jesse daughter." And he's going to say, "Man, how Jesse doing? Come, man, last time I saw you, you was a baby. Kiss on the cheek." Mwah. That's the perfect opportunity for COVID to get him there. Then he's going to walk off from there, right? She's going to say, "Oh, have you met my little sister? You can see this, the young one. Man, she was in Pampas when I saw her last. Come here, girl. Tell Jesse." Kiss number two, opportunity for COVID. How Perry Christie is ducking it, I don't know. But I cannot believe that Papa got it. Papa, I pull in for you. At 74, we got to beat COVID together. And now, Papa, I hear you say you're taking the vaccine. I can just leave you with that. You all let me know how it go, and then we'll figure it out. In about a year. I don't need to leave this island for a year. After 1 year, nobody turns into a carrot. I'm on board. All right? So my prayers are with, in all seriousness, my prayers are with the former prime minister, both of them. So my prayers is with Mr. Ingram for his speedy recovery. And my prayers is with Mr. Christie. Lord, please protect Christie. Because if Christie continues to be Christie, it could be difficult for him to duck it. That's all I said. All right? So, outside of that, we're talking about the economy today. I want to talk about what is the next step. Are we creating people who are eventually going to turn into victims of, social welfare? We've seen now, it's been a year, people have kind of become accustomed to not getting up and going to work. People these days, when you ask them what they're doing, are now comfortable with saying, nothing. They have come to the point where they rely on the $100 or the $200 that is going to come out of a kiosk every 2 weeks from a social assistance program. And I'm not really sure what is that doing to their desire to want to be producing citizens, right? You see people kind of just lazily approaching employ these days. There was once a time when everybody was zipping and buzzing and busy and needing to get to work and very focused on this thing and very focused on that thing. Today, not so much, right? By 12 o'clock, we're home or trying to get home or trying to rescue cats out of the inner city, some of us that are into that kind of thing. But very few people seem to still want to be self-reliant. And so I brought somebody in studio today because I want to talk about where exactly do we expect we will land? Where exactly do we hope we will land? And kind of, where do we go from here? How do we get from here, right? That is kind of what the ultimate question is going to be. Because, I mean, I don't know if we've thought about that, right? So that's kind of something I think we need to get talking about. And since I'm not smart, I like to invite smart people, right? To tell me about what it is that smart people think about when they think about these kinds of things. So Tiffany Bain is my guest this morning. Good morning, Tiffany. How are you?
Good morning.
How are we? To see you. I like your little dashiki dress you got on here.
It's Ankara, but oh, yes, yeah? Thank you.
When I saw it, I instantly wanted to say, hello, 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 and do a little fire dance, right?
Thank you.
I thought that would have been a bit excessive in the foyer, though.
Just a tad.
So, Tiffany, before we get started, tell us, who is Tiffany Bain?
I work as a research consultant, mm-hmm. currently attached to Org Education and Org Bahamas. But in my career and personal choices, I am a community and youth development specialist. That's okay. How I like to.
Community and youth development. So what kind of community development have you specially done?
I was about to say, so I focus more on like policy and program design and mm-hmm. the research that's behind that. I am an advocate for what they call strengths-based or assets-based design. Mm-hmm. And it's so funny that you mentioned that you don't think people want to work and this feels new to you. It's actually not new. It's our history. It's our legacy. Mm-hmm. So the Bahamas being a colonial nation, taking over from the helms of our past, we have had a history of what they call deficits-based mm-hmm. policy design, okay. which is that these people, they aren't capable of doing anything. There's a chosen few who has all of the answers, all of the solutions to the problem. Mm-hmm. And those people are often put into positions of power, politicians, et cetera. And then they tell us what it is that we need, and they create the things that we need. And so historically, we become people who think that, A, we can't do anything, and our entire power is held within these people. Mm-hmm. And it turns into like a cycle of, I'll just sit around and wait until the people who know how to do things do them. Mm-hmm. And that has continuously failed us. And here we are. Now it's just showing itself the way that it occurs. This is history.
I have a theory, right? And I want to bounce this off of you. You can tell me what you think, right? I suggested it the other day when I had Bishop Holland with me. I told him, I'm not sure if smart people have done for the world what the world had anticipated they would do, right? Like when we were less educated, somehow Mama them seemed to have been more intelligent and intelligible, right?
Right.
So they were intelligent and able to apply intellect, which is curious to me because if you measure them by any reasonable standard in society today, they would be illiterate.
Right.
But they survived the storms of their time.
Because the term smart is a scam. It's a complete scam. Mm. It bleeds into the whole thing that I just said, where it's like, there are the chosen few who can do a thing. Mm. So one of the byproducts of the deficits-based design mm-hmm. is that like only the smart people can make these choices.
Right.
And then smart was designed by like school structures. So like only the people who get these grades mm-hmm. get to be smart. And then those people get to go to college. And only those people are smart.
Should be figuring it out.
Right. Whereas no, everybody's a contributor to this. Everybody has a role to play. Everybody is smart and everybody mm-hmm. has value. Mm-hmm. And so that entire structure of intelligence and that validated intelligence that goes from primary school, whereas like if you were struggling in primary school and you didn't get the best grades automatically, obviously you were a life failure. Mm-hmm. But that's clearly not the case because, mm-hmm. you know, different people learn different ways and they have different values to bring to the table. So a person who might have been an artist would not have functioned well in a traditional school mm-hmm. environment. It doesn't feed their soul. It doesn't feed their passions. It doesn't feed their skills. And so they are in a system that only recognizes one set of things. It's not that you don't have something to offer. You're just in a system that only recognizes the one thing and you happen to not have it. Mm. It doesn't mean that you don't have good to contribute. And so when you move along in life and you have conversations with people who end up like breaking outside of that mold and ended up being successful regardless of what the school said about them, you hear their stories and you're like a Juan mm-hmm. or an Alan Wallace. Like when you listen and hear their stories, they were not the quote unquote best students mm-hmm. in the class. Sometimes they're disruptive. You know, sometimes they're the quote unquote rude student. Mm-hmm. And you find out like sitting in a classroom doesn't work for them because that's not how their brain works. They work individually. They'd rather not sit in a room with these other people. They could probably work like outside. That would inspire them better. And so, yeah, unfortunately, again, these systems build upon themselves. And we've decided there's only one way to look at intelligence and brilliance and leadership. And if you don't fit that mold, then you're not it. And that's a scam. Complete scam is a lie. Don't believe
it. How do we then cultivate a mindset, right? Because basically what I'm hearing you saying is that there is a cookie cutter model that's been set for the measurement of information. That model then decides who are the smarties and who are the dummies, right?
Yes.
Then have we failed community-wise then, right? Have our civic organizations, churches and I don't know, you know, girls' guides and that sort of stuff, have they all collapsed then in the face of this cookie-cutter model, which were teaching people skills that weren't necessarily textbook skills or teaching people application, thought application that was outside of the realm of what it is that you would learn in the reading, writing, arithmetic kind of fundamental layout, right? For instance, it's a joke I crack all the time, right? When I'm in the inner city rescuing abandoned kittens, right?
As you do.
Yeah, often I do it. There are a group of little boys that I could promise you, God and man, they ain't been on no virtual platform from March. I perfectly sure about it. They ain't been on no nothing virtual happened to them no time in the last year, okay? But easily recognizable to me is the fact that this little boy has changed bicycle 3 times in the last year.
Mm-hmm.
I've literally watched him take like blank frames, mm-hmm. and 2 weeks later comes back with a bicycle.
Yes.
So he has to learn economics because he's able to know what is the costing of a bicycle. Like he probably cannot write it on paper for you, but he can apply in practicality.
He has some experiential knowledge.
What it would cost, yes. to build a bicycle.
Yes.
He also has some engineering skill because he got the handle on and it looked good. The seat on, it looked good. This bike spinning almost as if I got it out of one of the, you know, bicycle shops, right? So he's not a dummy. Nor are the two associates of his dummies, I imagine.
Right.
But I could tell you, whatever is happening on the virtual platform matters not to them.
Correct.
How then does the civic organizations around him recognize that talent, recognize that trade, recognize his ability to deduce mechanical challenges the way he obviously can, mm-hmm. and get him to understand that he can apply that in the world in a way that generates money, in a way that spins off in the economy?
Okay, so part of the challenge in that is this idea has been perpetuated so long, a lot of us don't even know that we don't know. For example, if you look at teachers, mm-hmm. a lot of people who end up being teachers go from college directly into education. They've seen one single pathway and they've been taught and they've been indoctrinated into this line of thought for so long. Mm-hmm. They tell you things like, if you don't pass this class, this is gonna happen. Because again, this is what they themselves have had linear exposure. Mm-hmm. You have very few teachers who have done things outside of education before becoming educators, mm-hmm. and you know, move outside of that. And so that's what they believe. And so if you have people who have already subscribed through socialization and conditioning to this is what it takes to be successful, that's what they're going to perpetuate. Mm-hmm. So yeah, the diversion there is, or where we need to start looking at that is, this goes to a very core place.
Sure.
And one is recognizing who we are as a people, mm-hmm. and recognizing the value of what we have to contribute and not feeling the need to validate that outside of who we are, mm-hmm. like step one. Recognizing that the language that Bahamians speak natively is not standard English.
Right.
Okay. So, because like that step in itself recognizes that if I speak differently from what is taught in this book, doesn't mean I'm dumb, doesn't mean I'm not intelligent, doesn't mean I can't speak. It means I speak a different language. And when I walk into school, I may need to code switch because what is written in standard English is not the language that I speak in my regular life. Understanding that, acknowledging that, respecting that is step number one, mm-hmm. for recognizing the value that we have as a people and not putting it against the standard of the American / British curriculum that we have, mm-hmm. making us lesser than, step number one. Step number two, we need to acknowledge as a school system that there are a myriad of skills that are not measured in school. And just because you did not do well on a thing doesn't mean that you can't. Mm-hmm. Perfect example. My daughter is, and I talk about her a lot because she's dyslexic, but she's also incredibly independent. Like, so that combination of struggling with reading at her age, but also wanting to do things on her own has been her struggle. Mm-hmm. And so we worked a really long time to find her like a school curriculum that works for mm-hmm. her. My daughter stayed up. She couldn't sleep last night and did her school work for today last night because she was like, I want to just lay around tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And if I do my schoolwork early, I'll get it done.
She sounds kind of like me.
Right. Again, yeah. In a regular school environment, like on a report card, in a class that requires spelling and writing, she's getting an F. And what I say to her is like, did you actually do your best? Mm-hmm. And she's like, yeah, I did my best. I know what her challenges are. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to value her based on what it is that she can't do. Mm-hmm. I identify what it is that she can't do and I hype her up. And that's what we need to start doing. So when we realize children are struggling in a particular area, what we do is identify the strengths that they have. I like to draw another perfect example. My brother. My brother's a professional artist. He's a professional junkaneur. Mm-hmm. Okay, Carlos Bain. Carlos was like a mediocre student in school. Like school did not incite his passion. But I promise you, every single year on Christmas Day, mm-hmm. my brother would start to build a junkaneur costume. We lived in Mount Pleasant Village. He was nowhere near downtown. He didn't have a junkaneur group to affiliate with, but he would be so excited about Christmas. He would start to build a junkaneur costume, never made it to Bay. For like 13 years, never made it to Bay. I think he was about 18 the first time he ever made it to Bay Street. Mm-hmm. He is a junkaneur artist. What about being in a school environment tells you that you can be a junkaneur artist?
I don't know. I was asked by my teacher to leave art, and he got a letter from the vice principal suggesting that I leave art.
So you can't relate at all. Exactly. But again, a part of it, like, even if you are a formal artist, mm-hmm. nothing about school says you can go ahead and be a junkanoo artist.
Agreed.
And again, back to Alan Wallace. What about his academic career said that you should go on and be a professional artist? Nothing. Mm-hmm. I am the work that I do, there was actually nothing about my academic career that made me who I am. It was a myriad of like experiences, job experiences, and I had the opportunity, went to college, went to grad school, but nothing about what school was pushed me toward this path. And the world is so many more things than school are. We shouldn't just be validated by that single process.
You know, I had Lisa McCarty in here with me sometime last week, and she made a statement. I'm stealing it. It's going to be mine. I'm going to credit her for it this one time, and then I'm
and then it's
it.
Yours.
Right? She said, but for opportunities, we are all the same, right?
Yeah.
I have a similar saying. My saying is, I don't understand where classism comes from in the Bahamas because we're all variations of E Street.
Right.
Right? And so I hear that. I hear you saying that there are some people who will not fit the mood or who, but what are we doing? Like, what are the persons that are where we are? How do we affect those people? Because literally, like, you know, my little bicycle popping friend in the inner city, I imagine that he's just shy opportunities. Like, opportunities have just not found him. I, you know, and you think about, how do I affect that? How do I alter that? How do I put him in the way of opportunity? Because a lot of times, it's not necessarily even the child.
Right.
The parent doesn't know how to find opportunity. And unless opportunity somehow miraculously finds this child, he will find opportunity, certainly, more than likely to his detriment, though.
Mm-hmm.
All right? And so while he has a wonderful mechanical skill, what I imagine he needs is someone with greater mechanical skill to hone the mechanical. Not everybody is technical.
Right.
The fact that this child, in what I imagine is the second or third grade, can build an entire bicycle with his two hands
mm-hmm.
means that he obviously has something going on in his brain that not everybody has.
Mm-hmm.
Someone with a greater skill ought to tap into that. But how are we? I mean, how are the people like you and myself and, you know, smarter people, how are we ensuring that those people get in the way of opportunity?
Well, the first step, and I guess the broadest step is like youth development programs. Those are the ones that are designed in a way that fulfill children and help them to grow in ways that like school never will.
Mm.
And we need more of those. And those need to be funded. And that needs to be a priority of the government. I think at some point in my graduate studies, I wrote a paper on how if we used 1% of, and again, this goes outside of the public purse concept, but if we use 1% of money derived from gambling and earmark that for youth development programs, we could actually have a thriving youth development program.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I also designed something to the effect of like a youth enrollment program. So every child in the Bahamas should be a part of a youth development program. And I don't want to say that blanketly because I...
Because that's been an argument from 72 with the National Youth Program. I mean,
which is not a bad thing, but a part of it is these programs also have to be properly designed with the right people in place. Because again, if people in places are perpetuating the same things, then we have, you know, cyclic toxicity, that sort of thing. But there are programs, people in programs who have come to me, because that's a part of what I do. Mm-hmm. I design youth programs to make sure they have all of the elements for thriving youth. So that's one component of it. I think another part of it is goes on a political realm, and that's where you can kind of like seek the funding for it.
Mm-hmm.
People in smaller communities know what it is that they want for their kids and lay out those expectations for the person who is now courting you for your vote for the next season. That's a really good way to advocate for that. Like, this is what we want for our kids. You want to be our MP. I want to see you make this happen.
Mm-hmm.
That's another way. I like to think that our schools are now progressing toward more open designs that support the needs of students. But I know that is a very ambitious dream at this point.
What do you imagine funding looks like? When you think of funding for a more robust I'm imagining youth development program, and I don't like when they call it that because it usually becomes nothingness, right? When they say youth development programs, it's a nothing burger.
Right.
But I've always been very big on tailored, kind of specific youth groups that do very specific tailored youth things, whether it is in various areas. So I know the Pinewood Garden is where I go to look for children that have had exposure to carpentry and woodwork. I know Anglison is where I will go to look for, I don't know, my technical teams and that kind of stuff. And so unless you have that level of specificity, I imagine that you're going to have people that just fall through the crack, like in my estimation with Urban Renewal, where we kind of just learn in marching band music up and down all day.
Which is not a bad thing. Again, it's a really great skill to have because, okay, youth development programs at their core have a way of construction that supports a person as a
How
whole.
How many trumpeters am I going to need?
Again, it's not even about the trumpeting. There's a part of youth development that teaches character, it teaches discipline, it teaches community-mindedness. Mm-hmm. So these are all contributed. It teaches commitment. You come here every day. Mm-hmm. These are assets that you build that come to like a bigger picture. So you can be a part of a youth program that's a band and you never play that musical instrument again. Mm-hmm. But again, the other skills that have contributed to that program are what you need to progress toward adulthood. Mm-hmm. So I'm not just talking about very specific and specialized skills, because this child with the bike that you're talking about, it's always my concern when we start talking about very specifically tailored programs that we also end up limiting our children, because mm-hmm. now he gets push toward, say, let's think about his whole circumstance. Mm-hmm. So he's probably amongst the underserved. And he starts looking at these bikes and he gets an opportunity to like make more bikes. And so at 16, 13, somewhere between 13 and 16, he's like, school's not serving me. I'm not going to go to school anymore. I can do this bike thing. And now he is stuck, because now he has limited himself to this one line of work, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and he's probably making just above minimum wage, and now this is the cycle of his life, as opposed to that young man, while honing those skills, is probably a future engineer. Like, he's the brains behind the operation. Mm-hmm. He can't articulate how he's doing a thing, but with the right skills and with the right opportunities and exposure in the future, he can be a bigger thing. And that's why we have to think about skill development outside of our immediate need. And this is actually one of the problems that we have as a country. We like immediate gratification. Mm-hmm. When we set out our desires and goals, we want to see something happen now.
Isn't that a human thing, though?
And again, and a part of growth and the skill set of adulthood, mm-hmm. and maturity is being able to delay gratification for the long run. Mm-hmm. Like, it's the whole, like, I could drop out of school now, or I can stay here, I can thug it out, and I can have more opportunities ahead of me. Or I can stop here and I can just, like, I have what it takes to go into the hotel and work as lines. And then you're stuck as entry-level staff who, when the hotel decides to close down, you're just sitting there waiting for somebody to be like, pay me out. Mm-hmm. Like, we don't want more people who are stuck in the situation where they grasp at the first opportunity because they come from backgrounds where they have so few options. The first opportunity looks like gold, and now they're stuck there for the next 30 years in that entry level because they never had an opportunity to develop. And we stifled their desire for growth because we gave them the gold at the start of it.
So what is the obligation then of the citizen? What is the obligation? You know, the government has their obligation to ensure that there are youth programs, development funding, etc. But I imagine the chap that is building the bicycles through the Gone Away Rescue Homeless Kittens Act, I imagine that, you know, the argument for him would be, well, we've put in place the virtual learning platform. We've ensured that we donated quite possibly free electronic devices for his use. He doesn't have to be outside building bicycles. He can actually come and be a part of the system. And it is his own abandonment or the abandonment by his parents that have subjected him to this, I guess, this life outside fixing bicycles. Necessarily, someone will argue that he is not taking advantage of the opportunities afforded to him. But you just suggested to me that there are people like him that just cannot connect with that. But does he not have an obligation to try and be a part of the system?
So here's the thing. He's a child. Pedagogy is a thing for a reason. Pedagogy is the way you teach children. Mm-hmm. And that is called pedagogy. Mm-hmm. For a specific reason, because children aren't always necessarily motivated to learn, mm-hmm. all right? We have an academic structure that has conditioned children to be extrinsically motivated their whole time. Mm-hmm. Like, you've never been taught to do this for you.
Right.
You've been taught to do this for your teacher. You've been taught to do this for your parents. And in the absence of those motivators, who are you really doing this for? The computer screen? Like, you, like who is this? I don't even have the persons that I have been taught to be accountable to before. So now I'm just doing this for the computer.
Yeah.
And that's not a thing. I can't relate. I once taught a third grade class. I had 7 students, and each of them learned a different way.
Mm-hmm.
One class, 7 students, each of them learned a different way. So to put thousands of children in front of a screen and be like, be successful. I mean, because it's the same with school environment. To sit a whole bunch of students in a class and be like, everybody is going to learn and everybody should be smart at the end of that is not even a real thing. Looking at the statistics, about 12% of students make it to the UB through the government pathway, mm-hmm. which means there's about, what, why is my math off? 88% of students, math is not my strength.
Yeah.
88% of students.
I do percentage as well. I like
No, I love me a spreadsheet.
Yeah.
88% of students are underserved on this pathway that we have decided is the chosen route.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just based on having gone all the way through school, getting the requisite number of BGCSEs to be able to get into UB and on scholarship, that's about 12% of mm-hmm. students. So who are we really serving with a structure that is serving less than 90%?
But I mean, people will also say now, though, that the Zennial generation, they're just so temporal and their attention span is so fixed. I have a 5-year-old, right? And literally, this is what my 5-year-old thinks about the learning platform. He mm-hmm. says, Daddy, I sit here for a while in the front of my tablet. My teacher says, blah, 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 blah. And then I kind of go for lunch. Don't worry, though. I'm getting A's. Because, I mean, in his mind, I only need to listen to you long enough to pass this thing.
Correct.
And
who's teaching him that? Like, where is he learning that?
I don't know, because I've never told him that.
And again, this is a part of the socialization process. So now, in the process of life, he is learning that I just need to do the minimal amount to get the approval, and then I'm good. And so you're now talking about, like, why aren't people working? Blah. This is why, because they've been taught, I just need to do the minimal amount to get the approval, and then I'm good.
But the point I'm making is, you're talking about a child that has an entire, like, he has every asset that you could think about set there for him, because that is the investment into his involvement and his engagement.
Right.
I'm saying to you, though, that, and I'm just talking from a personal level, I can imagine what it must be like for governments and organizations and civic groups to continue to make the investments in the technology and make the investments in the infrastructure for people that, in this generation, find no difficulty with walking away. I spoke to a friend of mine. I have friends in the military, and I have friends that are in HR. And I'm ex-military. Do you know, my friends are now what you would, my squad mates are now what you would consider senior enlisted in the organization. Do you know what my friends are telling me? Miller, the Marine seaman that enters this organization today isn't the Marine seaman that entered this organization when we walked through this gate 20 years ago.
Right.
This chap will literally get upset and tender a resignation from this job in the morning because you said something to him that he feels was, I guess, too much, and he's not here for that, and so he's about to leave. They don't care about the medical, they don't care about the salary. I'm prepared to walk away from it all. So how do you invest in people that are that disengaged?
Okay, so there's two parts to that. You said, like, how does he stay committed when he has everything in front of him? That's like saying, you've put this entire meat display in front of me, and I'm not eating, but I'm vegetarian. So it's one of those situations where we are not, A, engaging and collaborating with the stakeholder who is the child. If this child is not learning at their best in this environment, what you're saying is, like, I'm just going to keep giving you this environment, and then you're just not doing what you're supposed to do in this environment. Because here's the thing. You are planning, and this is a part of the design. We've planned for an existence that no longer exists. We just happen to be in the control seat. These children will live in a world that we know nothing about. Why aren't we modifying for our context? It's like saying everybody in this place is a, and I'm just using this example. You work in a business. You're like, everybody in here steals. And then every day you complain about how something went missing. You are aware that you are in a den of thieves. How do you adapt to your context? Because this is no longer a problem. A problem is something that you can solve or resolve. These are human beings. They are now your context. I am teaching in a way, and this is how you flip it. I am teaching in a way that is not reaching my students is the actual problem. And so to your same scenario about, you know, this military life, there were some of us who were raised to withstand conditions that we didn't think were healthy. There are people who now feel like they don't have to be obligated to unhealthy situations. Mm-hmm. Again, there might be benefits, but they don't assess those benefits higher than their self-value, and they are willing to walk away from that. So the question is, why do we still have a system that is not accommodating the full person and all of their needs? Why does that still exist?
I don't know. It's crazy. I tell you, my friends in HR tell me all the time, me like can't punish these people. If I tell them I'm going to take away this benefit or take it, they don't care. If I tell them, listen, you 3 years away from what they would call gratuitable service, stay, you can get $30,000. You can have medical the whole time, dental the whole time, and a salary the whole
time. At the cost of my mental health? No,
I ain't care.
No, I'm good.
I out here.
I walk away.
That's crazy stuff. It's difficult to build systems around it. Anyway, listen, I'm talking to Tiffany Bin. We're chatting about, you know, society, what's going on around us, and how do we build the systems that build a better Bahamas? We're going to the break. Don't go anywhere. I'll be back.
Enough. One son died, his spirit is revisited us. True and living.
Jackie's a hard worker with a steady income, but she has a personal loan and multiple credit cards to pay off. To keep her account current, Jackie opted for a loan from Fidelity Bank to consolidate her debt into one monthly payment and earn interest on a built-in savings account. Be like Jackie. Call 356-7764 to book a complimentary financial coaching session. Fidelity also offers virtual assistance. Fidelity, we're good for you.
The new Guardian Radio app is here. Listen live to all our Guardian Radio shows and live video stream select programs in our studio. Get information about Guardian Radio shows and our hosts. Send messages, including text, email, and even call. All from our amazing new Guardian Radio app. Download it free today in your App Store for your Apple device or Play Store for your Android device. The all-new and improved Guardian Radio app.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours. It will be ours. Oh, one day, when the war is won, we will be sure. We will be sure.
We're back. Thank you so much for staying with me. Tiffany Bin is my guest this morning. I see this thing here says that you're a, what is this, a pedagogic? I'm trying to make sure I get the language right. It says that you're a pedagogic specialist. What exactly does that mean?
Is that literal?
That's what it says. It says.
My specialization is pedagogy. Yes. Yeah, I have.
Program designing.
Yeah.
Support, college readiness, and access to underserved youth.
Yes.
Yeah, that's interesting. How do you get all this stuff? Like, you only look 25, right? Like, when do you go to school to do all of this?
I'll take it. No, my journey has been very creative. So I graduated college as a with a degree in international studies, and you couldn't tell me I wasn't going into foreign affairs. Mm-hmm. And then, boom, recession. So there was a hiring freeze in the government. That did not happen. So I started teaching automatically, and right after I confirmed my first teaching appointment, Foreign Affairs was like, so what you saying?
You want the job.
And then I was like, I'm locked into a contract, and this was a point where I was still guilted by commitments, and so I stayed in that teaching contract, and moved on to another school. And then Foreign Affairs was like, what are you saying? And by this time, I was like, so let's talk about pay scale. And Foreign Affairs was like, we're going to start you at like the entry level. And I was like, I have bills. Yeah. No, thank you. So I moved on to another school and I was like, hey, I think I like this teaching gig. And so I did a postgraduate certificate in education with a specialization
in curriculum and pedagogy.
But I never quite, again, because I didn't have the traditional teacher route, I never accepted being like a teacher. So I always positioned myself as a curriculum designer or a learning designer, which is I create learning environments for children. My goal is not like, I'm not telling you a thing. I want you to learn a thing. And so I'm going to design a system for that learning.
I'm always skeptical about these degrees. Like I have a friend of mine, she may be listening. She's off getting her doctor's degree in, what is it? Course design and leadership. And
I'm that's a part of.
I feel like I was born with a doctor's degree in leadership. I'm certain when they stamp my birth certificate, if you look on the back of it,
yes,
you will see doctor of leadership on the back of my birth certificate.
Okay, so
I promise you, I'm not making this up.
No. You may have written that there. no, a part of, again, a part of that system design is recognizing that, you know, kids are going to be different. It's about learning to assess students outside of traditional ways. You know, like when we were in school, there was like, you learned a thing and then there was a test and you wrote it down. So a part of these, you know, advancing programs, they teach you how to measure knowledge. And how to have children demonstrate knowledge outside of traditional ways. Because there are very few times in your life that you are going to have to demonstrate how you know something in the exact same way you learned it in a school.
Agreed.
Yeah, so it's... And
I have never had to prove to anybody how competent I was at playing the recorder either.
Ever in your life. Exactly. And so again, a part of my issues in the system of education is consistently over the last few years made itself like a silo and an entity in and of itself, as opposed to like the vessel to the real world. And so they keep creating these systems of like how you do things that have no relationship with how the real world functions and acts. And I've rejected that, which is why I never accepted the term teacher, because I was like, I don't do that. I don't subscribe to that. And so again, I am an advocate of that. So back to your homie with the bike. Okay, if you want to teach him geometry, this is a really good time to do that. If you want to teach him math, you can formally introduce the value of that bike to him using those skills. So again, you can teach him place value. You can teach him regrouping. You can do all of these things within those skills. So when you start talk about like youth development programs, again, honing into what already exists and helping children to like elevate what those skills are in a real life context is a very like good way to show applied learning. In fact, you would be doing in the streets what people are paying in this country, like $15,000 for their children to learn how to do in a classroom. I've worked in a school where I've seen students with like a myriad of learning differences not be treated differently, but the school accommodated what those were, but they had the privilege to do that. And I don't want people in this country to think like you have a deficiency, because there's a system out there which exists in which people who have the same issues as you are recognized for the value that they have. And they go on to be really, really important people in this world because they have the assets and the community around them that celebrate them and treat them regularly. So there's another student out there with ADHD. There's another student out there with dyslexia, with dysgraphia, who is functioning just fine because their parents happen to have the means and opportunity to accommodate them. And that goes back to the first thing that I was saying. It's not that you can't do it. It's not that you're not able. It's not that you're not smart. You just happen to be a part of the system that doesn't recognize you. But in another place that you don't have access to, there's nothing wrong with you at all.
Now, we talked on the break. We talked on the break about how difficult people are to build systems around now, especially the Gen X, right? And it's because they hold value to nothing that is systemic. None of it matters to them, right? I get it, but you also talked about it's possibly because we are looking to incentivize the person rather than just fixing the incentivization in a way that they actually connect with. And I hear that, but I mean, you know, I think it was Churchill that came up with the acronym TANSTAFL, right? There ain't no such thing as free lunch, right?
Right.
So there has to be a buy-in on both sides. There has to be, like, I have to come to the line, but I think Gen X also has to come to the line.
Right.
And then when we get to the line, right, like, I'll give you one cookie and you will give me something.
Right. But here's the thing. They are there. Like, what is it that you are wanting from them? Do you have their competence? You have their commitment to the work.
I want them to not walk away. Stop walking
right.
away.
And so the answer to that problem is reduce the adversities. What are the things that you are doing that they do not value that make them walk away? And stop doing them. Like I work in an office, right? I work in an office where my boss talks to me any kind of way. Again, from like the organizational culture, this is an acceptable thing. Mm-hmm. But from a human resource culture, it is absolutely unacceptable. But you want me to accept it because, you know, this is what we do here. Mm-hmm. No, stop doing that.
Yes, this is the military. Where did you think you came to? Did they tell you we were going to be building kites here?
So here's the thing. Your strategic plan is you need to recognize that you treat people in a way that they don't want to be treated like, and therefore you will always have a staff deficiency because people aren't subscribing to what you're trying to sell. That's your problem. You need to fix it.
Like, do you know the military has made cliches around abuse? Like, if you're late for my parade, your body will send to your family, your soul will go to God, but your belongs to the chief.
And you will have a diminishing number of people who will subscribe to that nonsense. Like, what you're trying to say is like, how do I brainwash more people to do a thing that they don't want to do
historically? A thing that worked for 700 years.
Again, work is a very loose term. Not discussing a problem doesn't mean a problem doesn't exist. Like how many people, again, the U.S. has a very robust military system, but how many people have left with PTSD? They have an entire veterans group. What we're doing is like not addressing the byproduct of some. What we're not doing is addressing the byproduct of some of these behaviors and pretending they didn't exist. That doesn't mean it was good. That doesn't mean it worked for anybody. You're trying to hold on to things that have repercussions that you don't want to address and expect other people to buy into that. And they're like, no, we need to deal with this.
Let me read a couple of these text messages. Leaving people are not comfortable staying home. Just look at the hotel employees begging to get back to work. What does it say? What a specious, idiotic, tone-deaf, and most importantly, inaccurate thing to say. Wow, I'm so appreciative of your use. That is heavy. Would you like to go for, you know, saving some kittens with me in the inner city later?
I'm happy that wasn't for me.
Wow, that's heavy. Mr. Miller, you went deep on the MJ theory, and it's the blind cannot see this game. I'm convinced you have the true light many are in darkness. Hi, this is a really valuable woman on your show today. Somebody else says, Miller, this is by far your best guest ever. Ever?
Oh, wow.
Ever? I feel so much smarter just by listening. Wow, is this Empress prophesying? She's an awesome, rare angel. Make all the teachers go to her class. Well, listen, when you start the business of teacher school, I want to make sure that I am chancellor of the school, okay? I work to an architect firm through Elizabeth Avenue. I see office abuse every 2 hours every day. Well, listen, you would be perfect in the military. They took soft man discipline and accountability in the military. I don't know if this is English. They too soft. Discipline and accountability in the military is important. Correct, because when you don't pay attention, people die.
Discipline is not equal to punishment. These are not synonymous.
Then how do you associate your behavior with needing correcting? If I don't shell you, then you will not associate the importance of proper decision making.
Discipline
so you have
is
to
not,
make decisions
discipline does
under
not have
pressure
to be punitive.
Every time in the military. And when you get in the battlefield, when you're out there, there is no backup, mister. You are your front up and backup. All right? And so I need to make sure that what I apply here in the combat training zone is so rigorous that when you get out there, because Mother Nature won't say, oh, you're not having a good day today, you're having a headache because you have a hangover. That's
absolutely.
It. No. So when you come to work with this hangover, we're going for a 9 mile.
No. So a part of it is recognizing those skills which are necessary. For example, people who want to be astronauts, they will be subjected to extraordinary conditions in there. And so they are trained for this. And they tell them in advance, this is what you will experience and this is why we're doing this. And this is what needs to happen. People need to be exposed to like, okay, this is a position that I'm training you for and this is what I will have to do to prepare you for that role. Is this what you want? You can't just go around and abuse everybody and say, well,
it's the military.
This is what we do. You can't do that.
Tiffany, we're almost out of time. So listen, how do people find you and how do people go about following you in social media?
Don't do that.
Don't follow me on social
don't
media.
Follow me on
do
social
not
media.
Follow her on social media.
Because my personal persona and my professional...
But you have to have like public pages.
You can follow me at Org Bahamas, and I'm also available at tiffany@orgbahamas.com. That's my professional version. Don't go to any of my social media. Don't do that.
All right, Tiffany Bennett is my guest. She's been so fun. I've got to have you back because these people seem to love you. I mean, they're calling people like Empress and Goddess. And hey, can you all see her? Isn't she on radio? Like, how are you all coming to this conclusion? I'm confused. But when you start the teacher school for teachers, don't forget, Chancellor of the Institution, Levin Miller. I want a nice plaque on the door, right? Because I'm Bahamian, and I the only way for you to know that I'm in charge is to put my name on the door and
pomp
say
and pageantry.
That I'm in charge, right?
Absolutely.
Way to go. Anyway, thank you so much for being with me. Thank you so much for joining me this afternoon. I'm Levin Miller. I was Unleashed on your radio. I'm Unleashed each weekday at 11 a.m., so join me again tomorrow. This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Station for Fresh News is Smart Talk. So don't go anywhere. News is next.
Justice is juxtapositioning us. Justice for all just ain't specific enough. One son died.